welcome to a very special episode of The Projection Booth. I'm your host, Mike White, and joining me from the great state of Colorado is the one and only Mr. Rob St. Mary.
Greetings. Did you know that there's actually a beer in Colorado that you can't buy anywhere else?
Really?
Yeah, I drink it. It's called Colorado Native.
Oh.
It's made from Colorado ingredients, and you can only get it here. It's pretty good, but I don't know. Maybe they don't think other people would like it, or there's something in the DNA of Coloradans. Anyhow, I digress.
I've also wanted to try Colorado Kool-Aid.
Colorado Kool-Aid?
Yeah. It's a can of Coors.
Oh.
Brewed from a mountain stream. It'll set your head on fire and make your brain scream. I can't remember the lyrics.
Okay. Well, speaking of Coors and the connection to Coors, I saw Ice Cube last week, and he pulled into town in his tour van, or bus, actually, and it had a big old Coors ad on the side, so he's been doing those commercials, I guess.
Do they make a 40-ouncer in Coors?
Well, you know, that would be gangsta, but, you know, you do what you gotta do. I mean, plus, he's getting up there in age.
Yeah, he's changing his image, too. He's more of a family-friendly kind of guy.
Yeah, he's the family-friendly gangster rapper, which is kind of interesting. You know, what was funny was, as I was watching Ice Cube, and this is the first time I got to see him, and I'd been a fan since high school, is it's interesting that he hasn't changed the lyrics, references to beepers and stuff like that, and some of the old tunes. And then, of course, in it Was a Good Day, he's got that thing about wanting to, you know, get with his girl since the 12th grade, and I'm thinking, dude, that's like 30 years ago, man. Like, you really got up your game.
That is unrequited love. So let's talk a little bit about the Cinetopia Film Festival. Actually, this month is going to be a little bit of a film festival craziness for me. I'm doing Cinetopia this weekend, and then the weekend after that, I'm going to the Waterfront Film Festival, which I believe is formerly of Saugatuck, but now it's over in Grand Haven. So just down or up the road a little piece. I always get confused about the west side of the state geography.
West side.
So with Waterfront, I really can't talk a whole lot about it because, you know, even though it says on their website that they'll have the program up by late May, here it is early June and nothing's up there yet. So I'm kind of like really hoping to find out. I heard that E.G. Daily is going to be there, though, which would be exciting. But really, I'm going for Skiz and Joe, who are going to be there with Hit and Stay, which we will be covering here in, I think, about, what, like 3 weeks?
Yeah, just about that.
We'll be doing the Rep and then the VHS Extravaganza, and then I believe Hit and Stay is the one right after that. Cinetopia, though, they've had their schedule out for a while, and they have a lot of good-looking stuff. I went through the program book last night and kind of was marking off things that I want to see, making my plans for next weekend. And they start on Thursday, which isn't too bad of a deal, and I'm going to just kind of shoot over there after work. And then it's a matter of trying to figure out which of the three opening night films I want to go see. They're doing the tribute to Ron Ashton featuring Iggy and the Stooges, Let My People Go, and the film Haunter, which we talked a little bit to Vincenzo Natali about. That's his new film, and I think I'm going to have to go see that in order to support Vincenzo, and plus it looks like the film that's kind of right up my alley.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing Haunter. I mean, hopefully I'll eventually get a chance to see it as it rolls around the country and eventually onto some sort of sundry format for the home use. It was great talking to Vincenzo. You know, we had him on the Blue Velvet episode, so if you haven't heard that one, go back and listen to that. And he talked a little bit about this new one he's put together, which is good because I was a huge fan of Splice. I thought Splice was great, and I know that you like Cube a lot and actually did an episode on Cube.
Yeah, well, when it comes to him, it's really tough. Like, if I had to pick one, it was difficult to choose one movie to do of his because, really, I like them all. And I was really kind of hoping after Splice, it'd be like, okay, let's get this guy, you know, Natali, some work here. Let's get going. And, you know, he'd start pumping out movies on a little bit more regular basis. But, yeah, just with the economics of Hollywood, I guess that's not the case.
Yeah, that's always seems to be the case. And especially when you listen to The Rep, coming up in a bit here, we're going to have an episode on a documentary about repertory cinemas, and one that really focuses on Toronto. And in that film, they tried to do a whole like week or month or something of Canadian film. And I'd have to say that, you know, I mean, we know the Canadian filmmakers here in the States. I mean, Adam McGoyan and David Cronenberg and obviously Vincenzo Natali and things like that. It's I guess in Canada, it's the old saying that I heard Werner Herzog say about why his films don't do well in Germany is he said, you know, Germans hate their own poets. So I guess maybe in Canada, the folks don't like the Canadian films so much. Although I'd have to say that Vincenzo's films aren't, you know, dripping with maple syrup. I'd have to say that his stuff is a little more universal and in the sci-fi realm, at least. But the other thing that's interesting here, and I want to talk about this, and hopefully you'll get a chance to see this because they're going to show it, I guess, on the Sunday, on the 9th, is this Tribute to Ron Ashton documentary. And the reason why I bring this up is that I was actually at that show, which I think was 2 years ago in April, at where they're showing it in the first night at the Michigan Theater in Ann Arbor. It's kind of an interesting show. I mean, Ron Ashton, for those who don't know, was a guitar player in the Stooges, you know, the place that launched Mr. Carnival Cruise soundtrack, Iggy Pop, and Ron Ashton really, as a guitar player, sort of created that sound of what eventually went into the Ramones and the Sex Pistols and the Clash and all that stuff that became the Lovelies of punk rock. So the Stooges were considered proto-punk along with the MC5 at the time in Detroit, late 60s, 68, 69. And then the Stooges died after David Bowie tried to resurrect them around 73, 74 with Raw Power. And after Raw Power didn't sell, that was pretty much it. And then Iggy went solo. But the one thing that will be interesting to see with this documentary, and I haven't seen a trailer for it, and I don't know if there is one, was that I was told that this was something that Jim Jarmusch was doing. It doesn't say director, but it says Jim Jarmusch is in the film. So I don't necessarily know if it's him doing it or not. I mean, I guess we could do a little more research and find out. But he was definitely there. Jim Jarmusch was there that night. And I know that when I went to the show, there were like signs everywhere. It was like, we're filming this for, you know, posterity kind of thing. The show was really good. I mean, for me, it was an opportunity to see the James Williamson Raw Power era of the Stooges. Although Ron wasn't on stage. And see, this is the thing that's interesting about the Stooges. If anyone knows anything about the Stooges, was that Ron started out as the guitar player. And then when Raw Power happened, Iggy called him up, and he had already been working with James Williamson, who was a guitar player, and said, I want you to come to London, but you have to play bass. Now, how many lead guitar players do you know out there in the rock world would go, okay, I'll play bass? That's just sort of amazing. It's almost like most people would say, well, that's kind of a step down. You know, to go from being the guitar player in the band to being a bass player. The thing that was interesting about the show was there was a couple of opening acts. There was like an orchestral piece. Henry Rollins was there, and I think Henry Rollins emceed it, from what I remember. And he told this story, and I'm sure this will be in the documentary, of him traveling all over the place. He's got this tendency to travel, and I guess he does a show for National Geographic Channel on his travels. And he said he went somewhere. I can't remember if it was like Southeast Asia or Tibet or somewhere, whatever. And he met this teenage kid, and he played him through his headphones Stooges. And the kid was just like amazed by it. And he goes, that's the power of this music, is that, you know, you don't even have to know English. You don't even have to know anything about this band. You just hear a couple of songs, and it's just it's infectious in that way. And the one thing that I found kind of sad, and this came through my research for the book, as we've talked about before, I've been writing this book on Orbit, the Detroit magazine that was around from 90 to 99. But in the early days of the crew that did all the Orbit stuff, they were all centered around Bookies, 870, which was a gay club that turned into a punk rock club in the late 70s in Detroit. And the one thing that was really interesting about the Bookies scene was that you had this band called Destroy All Monsters, which came out of an art collective in Ann Arbor that launched some really well-known contemporary art people, one of which was Mike Kelly, who died a couple of years ago. But the rock band version of Destroy All Monsters, which was formed around 77, 76, 77, featured Niagara, the artist, as the singer, and had Ron Ashton on guitar and Michael Davis of the MC5 on bass. And what was kind of sad about this tribute to Ron Ashton was they did this slideshow where they showed all this, you know, all these photos of him and everything. And there was all this talk about Ron Ashton and everything. But the whole Destroy All Monsters era and the Dark Carnival era and everything that he did between the Stooges falling apart in like 74 and the Stooges reforming in like 2004 was never discussed. Like there was like no photos, there was nothing. And I thought that was really bad form, because even though Destroy All Monsters didn't put out albums, they were important. I mean, like in the Detroit scene and in the national scene, I mean, they were featured in Punk Magazine in New York, because it was Ron Ashton, because it was the Stooges. And to me, it was sort of a slap in the face to the fact that he, you know, all the stuff that he did outside of just being the guitar player in the Stooges. It was just sort of like, that was it. That's all they wanted to focus on. They didn't want to talk about anything else. And I thought that was rather sad and one-dimensional. It would have been a lot nicer, I think, if, you know, they gave Niagara 5 minutes to say something, or they would have put photos of Destroy All Monsters in there, or if somebody would have played, you know, November 22nd, you know, which is probably their like best known song, which I think we'll use in the executive action episode. But it just really kind of bothered me a little bit, especially now that I'm decent friends with Niagara and have gotten to know her and interviewed her for my book. So, but it'll be a good film to see. And I'm looking forward to seeing it because I'm a huge Stooges fan, and I've been lucky to see the reformed Stooges now, both versions. I saw the Ron Ashton version, and now I've seen the James Williamson version. So I don't feel cheated.
Yeah. That just seems kind of gauche. Whoever made that decision, it seems a little, I don't know, one-sided.
Well, friends of friends have told me that it may have been a family decision, that there was someone in his family that didn't necessarily like Niagara or something, and decided to basically cut that whole era of his life out of the tribute, which, like I said, I mean, when I die, I don't want everyone to kiss my ass. I want them to go, you know, it's kind of an asshole sometimes, too. So, I mean, I'd like a more well-rounded tribute when I die.
Well, don't worry, Rob. If I have anything to say about it, I'll definitely get up there and say that you were an asshole.
Thank you. I knew that was going to come from you, because I appreciate
count
it.
On me.
Well, you know, there are so few things that I do count on you on. So there you go.
that's probably for the best, since I'm pretty unreliable. Some other films that they're showing, they're doing the U.S. premiere of one called Body Fat Index of Love, and you'll hear a little bit more about that when we play back the interview in a little bit with Amanda Bynum and Brian Hunter of the Cinetopia Film Festival. And another one that I want to check out is called 52577, and I know that you've got that tattooed on your wrist, being a huge Star Wars fan.
I wasn't even alive.
A lot of people celebrate May the 4th, as in May the 4th be with you, as which makes all of the Star Wars fans sound like they have a speech impediment. But yeah, if you're a true fan...
They don't?
Hey, you're talking to a Star Wars kid over here.
Okay.
But yeah, if you're a true fan, you're all about 525.
25 or 624?
One or the other. That'll be my Friday. Unfortunately, I won't be able to take off work, so I'm only going to be able to see two movies. But Saturday, I'm going to be pretty filled up. Going to be watching Dear Mr. Watterson, which is a documentary about Calvin and Hobbes, which I used to read quite regularly when it was in the paper. And I'm very curious if they'll talk about like the two eras of Calvin and Hobbes, because I don't know if you read that strip, but there was two distinct points. There was like one where the comic strip was very fun and funny to read, and then Watterson took like this hiatus, and then he came back and they were all like navel gazing and philosophic, and it was just like, what the F happened to you, dude?
And then now he's retired and there are no more, except we get to see Calvin pissing on everything on the back of cars.
Yes, that is the national dialogue.
I feel bad about that in the way that like R. Crumb had Keep on Truckin' taken away from him, and that damn thing showed up everywhere.
The first year they did a collection of Harold Lloyd shorts, which they had accompanied by live organ. And this year they're doing another shorts program. This year it's Mary Pickford. So I was like, well, I don't really have that much interest in Mary Pickford, you know. But then I was thinking, well, really, I haven't seen any of her films. And I know she was, quote unquote, America's sweetheart for a long time, and one of the founders of United Artists. So I was like, yeah, this chick had some stuff going on. So I'm going to check that out. And then I think they've got a Pickford expert that's going to be there talking about her in between films or to introduce everything. So I'm going to check that out. And then after that, they've got Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, Jimmy Dean, which I'm very excited about. I mean, they have a ton of other films, I should say that, but this is what I'm choosing to see, is Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, Jimmy Dean, which I hadn't seen since it played on HBO way back in the day. So it's been a few years.
Well, not only that, but this is good because they've decided that they're going to do a back-to-back of Altman films. So we can talk about Jimmy Dean a little bit, but I'm also excited to see that they're pulling up some political Altman films here.
Yeah, doing back-to-back Secret Honor and Tanner 88. And we talked about, we talked about both of those with Professor Frank Beaver from U of M a few months ago. But we really went into, you kind of went nuts with the Secret Honor episode, just really diving into that one. And that's playing at 5 o'clock on June 7th over at Angel Hall, which is probably just, actually, it's kind of just like a block away from where they shot it.
Yeah. The Secret Honor episode last November, it was our Election Day episode because, you know, what better to talk about a presidential election than talk about the disgrace of Richard Nixon. And what's exciting about Secret Honor, I mean, you can go back and listen to it. I just love Philip Baker Hall. I mean, Philip Baker Hall is just amazing to watch in this. If you haven't had a chance to listen to the episode or pull up the Criterion DVD of Secret Honor, I mean, you really, really need to, because it's even if you don't know everything that he's talking about, it's almost like watching a jazz performer. I mean, it's just like one guy doing a riff for an hour and a half. It goes up and down and up and down, and there's laughs and crying and, you know, threats with guns. It's in plenty of scotch. So there you go. Speaking of Secret Honor, just to, you know, of course, plug other material, Donald Freed, who wrote Secret Honor, will be on an upcoming episode as we head towards November. So actually Executive Action, which I had already referenced. So we're going to have him on. And he's going to talk about Executive Action and some of the work that he's doing now.
Yeah, 50 years ago, JFK was assassinated. So if you happen to know any JFK conspiracy nuts, we would love to have somebody on the show to talk about that. Not necessarily nuts, but somebody that's an enthusiast and has done a lot of research. So I've reached out to Oliver Stone. No response so far, but here's hoping.
Yeah, and plus on Twitter, remember, he's the Oliver Stone, because there are so many Oliver Stones
just hanging out there.
Yeah, there could be a Oliver Stone out there somewhere, just random Oliver Stone. But, you know, he's the Oliver Stone on Twitter. Well, another thing that's really interesting here, I'm looking at your list for Saturday, and don't mean to spoil it for other folks, but you've already seen I Am Divine. And what better than a Saturday night midnight screening of I Am Divine? It's a fabulous documentary about, of course, the fabulous Dreamlander Divine working with John Waters. And what was great about I Am Divine, and we're going to be talking about this in an upcoming episode, we have a chance to see it already, is that to me, there's so much stuff in there beyond just John Waters. Like, I'm such a huge John Waters fan, I've seen all this stuff and all the stuff with Divine, is that the filmmakers really went out of their way to find all these like small plays and off-Broadway stuff and in the records. Like, did you know that like Divine put out disco records? I mean, I kind of knew, but I'd never heard them, and I didn't realize they were actually kind of popular. So it's great in this documentary to see not only the stuff with John Waters and all that connection to the Dreamlanders in Baltimore and everything, but to sort of see everything else that really is the totality of Divine.
Yeah, it is a terrific, terrific movie, and it is playing at quite a few festivals, so people should have a chance to be able to see it, other than just folks in Ann Arbor who are attending Cinetopia. I mean, go on to our invite on Facebook, and I've been posting dates as they become available, signed up for the newsletter over at I Am Divine, and just am trying to spread the word a little bit more, because people really should check this out. It is a great, great work.
See, but what's interesting about all the Cinetopia Festival stuff, obviously has to be for you, is the opportunity to go back to the University of Michigan to hang out at Angel Hall, which I know was your old stomping grounds when you were there.
Yeah, I saw a lot of movies in Angel Hall. I think I saw more in the Modern Languages building and maybe even NatSci, but yeah, definitely saw quite a few, and especially for class. I definitely saw a lot of movies at Angel. So yeah, last year I got to see at least one or two movies at Angel, and it was great kind of going back and even just kind of like smelling the way that the hall smelled. You know, they have a very particular odor, you know, the cleaning products plus the mustiness of everything, and just kind of, you know, that place has been around for quite a few years. So going back in there again after all this time, it was kind of neat.
It always is, because the University of Michigan is a beautiful campus, great place to go. And like I said, we had a lot of fun doing the research for Secret Honor and going through all the archive there.
So another one that they're showing on Saturday is called The Source Family, which is kind of neat because Craig Baldwin just mentioned that on last week's show about when we were talking to him about Mock-Up on Moo.
So what was it about this that was so interesting? Do you remember him talking about the Source Family?
Well, I think it's this whole idea of, you know, kind of cults in America and some of the, you know, there's really, I mean, you look back at like the 1970s, especially, and there were so many like spiritual movements and everything. And we kind of referenced it when we were talking about The Howling. So, you know, the line about, you know, I've tried Est, I've tried this, I've tried Scientology. And, you know, there was, of course, Moonies were very popular back then. And you had, you know, the cult of Guyana, cult of the damned. You know, you had all of these different kind of, you know, different cult religious type groups. And this is a documentary about just one of those. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this played out. And I believe, of course, it's set in California. So it seems like that's a good place for it.
Once again, next week, or actually later this week, you'll get an opportunity to hear Battlefield Earth, which is our second and hopefully final episode on dealing with anything with Scientology. But it's always interesting, like I talked about in the first one, in Mock-Up on Moo, is my interest. I've always had an interest in outliers. I've always had an interest in sort of like where people come up with their ideas, why they believe the things they believe, how do they come to these things. And I think that's what makes something like that so interesting. And I was just looking at the page for it, and I'm looking forward to seeing this as well. Yeah, the other one, and not to compare these people to the soap guy, but I saw on the streaming Netflix recently the documentary on Dr. Bronner's soap, and how this guy from Germany, you know, came over here and made this soap that all the hippies used to buy back in the day, and how his bottles and the soap bar, you know, label and all that was all just filled with all of this like spiritualism and everything, and sort of where all these ideas kind of came from him. So that's sort of an interesting documentary to see if we want to talk about sort of subcultures.
I'll have to check that out. Is he similar to Tom of Maine?
No, more like Tom of Finland, I think.
Okay. And then the final film that I'm going to see that day, because I have seen I Am Divine, though I'm tempted to go see it again on the big screen, I will be seeing A Hijacking, which is apparently it's already been kind of earmarked for a U.S. remake. So I obviously enjoy seeing the original film compared to the remake first. So this is I believe it's a Danish film about Somali pirates. So, and maybe somebody can finally tell me why those pirates don't wear like the big puffy shirts and eye patches and stuff.
Yeah, they're about as bad as video pirates.
And then the final day, Sunday, again, filled with films all over the place. And it's kind of nice this year. Not only are they doing three venues, well, actually four, because there are two theaters at the Michigan Theater now. So they're doing four venues or four theaters in Ann Arbor. And then they're also branching out to the DFT. So if you miss stuff at one point, you can go see it at the DFT. Like on this Sunday, they will be doing the Dear Mr. Watterson, the Source Family, and the Ron Ashton documentary. But I will be over in Ann Arbor, and I'm going to be seeing Wrong, which is the new film by the guy who did Rubber. I don't want to try to pronounce his name. All right, I'll take a shot at it. It is Quentin Dupieux. Dupieux.
Gesundheit.
So then, kind of as a lark, I saw this movie, this title in the program, and I was like, Renaissance Man, huh? I wonder what that is, Renaissance Man. Okay, so I'm looking through the program guide, and I'm just like not finding it for a little while, and I'm just like, Renaissance Man, that sounds like a very interesting title. And then I noticed that the date on the movie is 1994, and then finally I go, oh, it's that Danny DeVito film.
Correct.
So I'm thinking about going to see Renaissance Man.
They don't put it in the write-up here, but from my recollection, part of Renaissance Man was shot in Detroit.
I remember the flyover in seeing the Renaissance Building and everything. And this was at a point where it was very rare to see Detroit in any movies.
Yeah, that was 94. So things really didn't pick up until sometime in the 2000s. So another 10 years after that.
Yeah, DeVito kind of had a little thing going on with Detroit because he had that and he had Hoffa.
And I think he also helped to produce Out of Sight. I think it was Jersey Films that did that. And that was 97, which was the Soderbergh, George Clooney, Elmore Leonard thing. This documentary, I know you don't have time to see this, but I would like to check this out, is Ain't Doing It For My Health, a film about Levon Helm, which I would be fascinated in this whole thing. It's a shot over 2 years before Helm's death in 2012. And for those who don't know Levon Helm, he was the voice in The Wait, you know, the singer of the band, which used to be Bob Dylan's backup band, Robbie Robertson and all that stuff. And if you're a Scorsese fan, of course, you've seen The Last Waltz, so I'm not going to tell you about that. But this seems like it would be an interesting little film to see.
Levon likes his money. He makes a lot, they say. He spends his days counting in a garage by the motorway.
There you go. I actually had a friend of mine who used to go out to Woodstock, and Levon Helm lived in Woodstock, New York, and he had a studio, and he used to go out there and record with him. So it's kind of cool.
Seems like something else happened in Woodstock.
Yeah, I have no idea what that was.
Maybe they must have a film festival out there too.
Maybe, I don't know.
So yeah, so that's going to be my weekend, exciting weekend over at the Cinetopia. So I think we should take a little break here and play the interview that I did with Amanda Bynum and Brian Hunter of the Cinetopia Film Festival, and you can hear even more from these fine folks. Cinetopia Year 2, how was Year 1?
Year 1 was good. You know, we learned a lot, which probably makes it sound like it wasn't good, but it was. It was really good. We definitely met our attendance and financial goals, which were modest, but that left us some room to grow. So we had about 5,000 admissions last year. So it went really well. We gave out a handful of kind of audience awards. Yeah, it was good.
Well, from an audience perspective, I had a great time. I went up and saw Superman on the big screen over at the State Theater, went over to the Angel Hall and saw What's Up, Doc? With Barbara Streisand, and then went over to the Michigan Theater and got to see some Harold Lloyd shorts, which were introduced by his granddaughter. Awesome, awesome stuff. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Yeah, Brian and I think, would both agree that it's the hardest we'd ever worked on anything. And it totally paid off. The positive feedback that we got from the community, from everybody that attended the festival, and from the filmmakers and special guests that attended the festival. Everyone just had a wonderful time and said that we put on a quality event. So we were very pleased with how it turned out.
Yeah, everything seemed top-notch. I mean, I know that you guys have probably learned a lot of lessons from having the Ann Arbor Film Festival there for so many years. And I think all of that was, you know, really showed. You had, you know, great-looking program, and just everything seemed to be running on time. And, yeah, just some quality events. So I know you guys are expanding this year, moving down to also show stuff at the Detroit Film Theater. How did that kind of come about?
My understanding is that the origins of this happened at a Tigers game. Russ Collins, our executive director, and Elliot Wilhelm, who's the film curator at the Detroit Film Theater, ran into each other at a Tigers game. Hadn't seen each other in years, and ran into each other at a game about 3 years ago, and just kind of started talking about working together on a project like this. So thanks, Tigers. When we really started planning the festival this year, we reached out to Elliot fairly quickly to see if our expansion into Detroit could take place at the DFT, and he got on board really quickly. So they've been a really great partner in the programming as well as in the promotion of the festival. So yeah, we're thrilled to be working with them.
Not only do you have guests at one venue, but then I'm seeing guests are available at the second venue as well. So it's kind of like, if you can't make it to one, you can always make it to the other, but wouldn't it be great if you can make it to all of the stuff?
Exactly. And, you know, we know it's a hard choice, and that's kind of it's the mixed blessing with film festivals, that you can't see everything. So we've got Of the 9 films that are screening down at the DFT, 7 of them are screening at another time in Ann Arbor, but 2 of them aren't. So if you want to see those films, you got to go to the DFT.
So let's talk about the films. What kind of stuff are you showing this year? What are some of your special guests? You know, what can people expect this year?
We've been saying around the office here that it's the best films from the best film festivals. And I think we've actually lived up to that this year. We've got films from Cannes. We've got films from Berlin. We've got films from South by Southwest. We've got films from Tribeca. We've got films from Cleveland. Cleveland, I don't know if you've ever been there, Mike.
I've been to Cleveland, but I haven't been to the film festival there.
Oh, the film festival there is great. It's a great international film fest in the Midwest. And we really looked at Cleveland as sort of inspiration for the Cinetopia. We thought that Detroit and Southeast Michigan and Ann Arbor, there's not really an international film festival of this scale. And that's what we want to deliver to Southeast Michigan, is a film festival that you can hang your hat on and be proud of.
Now, the great thing about the Cleveland Film Festival is they started, this was the 39th year of their festival this year, I believe. And they started as it was a 4-week film festival, 1 screening every Saturday for 4 weeks. And now they're an 11-day film festival that takes place in 8 theaters, eight screens simultaneously. They're screening hundreds of films over these 11 days. So aspiring to be like this festival, seeing where they started and how they've grown, is really a goal of the whole Cinetopia team.
And the important thing I think to remember for us is that festivals like Sundance and festivals like Toronto didn't start off as industry fest. They started off as just regional film festivals for Toronto and Park City, and they grew into something more. So we aspire to grow, just to keep growing and growing and growing. We don't know what the future holds, but we're looking forward to just watching this festival roll out all over Southeast Michigan.
So who are some of the guests that you're going to have there this year?
We have so many cool guests, I hardly even know where to start. So one of the people that I'm really excited about bringing, honestly, it will be a name that not very many people recognize. It is a producer, and his name is Ilkka Matila. He is coming from Finland because we have the U.S. premiere of this Finnish film called Body Fat Index of Love. It's got the greatest title probably of all the films we're screening. It's a romantic comedy, and we're so excited that we have a U.S. premiere, so we had to bring somebody in from the film. So we're very pleased to be welcoming Mr. Matila from Finland, all the way from Finland. It's a 17-hour flight, so if you see him during the course of the festival, be extra nice to him, because that's a pretty serious plane trip.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So how did you run across this one?
So I've been working with the Finnish Film Foundation for about a year. A community organizer named Yvonne said, you know, there's this great film product coming out of Finland. They really want some films shown in the States. The only catch is it's got to be shown. These films have to be shown in a festival setting. And we went, okay. So I've just been working with some really wonderful people over in Finland working on getting these films. And this was just one that, you know, the title jumped out at me, then the description sounded good. I watched an advanced copy, and it's just a very charming, romantic, fun film. And so we were able to scoop it up.
One of the things I'm looking forward to is that we're also this year, much like we did for David Newman last year, that U of M's contribution to screenwriting. But this year we have Jim Bernstein, and Jim Bernstein wrote films like The Mighty Ducks 3 and Renaissance Man with Danny DeVito. And he's a local guy, and we feel that his film and his body of work is important. And he's going to come. He's going to be on stage. He's going to introduce the films. He's going to talk a little bit about the production and the screenwriting craft of it. In addition to that, we're also this year teaming up with Screen Arts and Cultures at the University of Michigan to be part of their Robert Altman Symposium. So they're bringing in Altman scholars from all over the country to take part in the symposium, but they're also bringing in some people that he worked with in his movies. Mrs. Altman will be here for it. Michael Murphy will be here for it. And that ties in with some of the screens we're doing. Secret Honor, which was filmed here in Ann Arbor with as a double feature with the pilot episode of Tanner 88 of the great HBO show. We're showing Nashville because you have to show Nashville if you're talking about Robert Altman. And we're also showing Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, which is the restored print from UCLA that hasn't been seen in very many places in the last few years. It's never been made available on DVD. It's the only way, if you want to watch it now, is if you have a VHS copy laying around. So we're really excited about the Altman stuff.
We have producers from films, we have directors, we have screenwriters, we have actors. I think we're bringing in close to 30 guests, not including the people coming for the Altman Symposium. So we've got a pretty good swath of our program represented by some special guests.
And one of the things that I'm glad you liked the Harold Lloyd thing last year. This year we're doing a collection of Mary Pickford screenings with live organ accompaniment, including her film Sparrows, and then a selection of shorts programs, trailers and outtakes and that sort of thing, all from the Library of Congress. So these are rare 35 millimeter prints. And the thing that's most exciting is a woman from the Library of Congress.
Her name is Crystal Schmidt.
Is coming out to the screens. And she's like the premier Mary Pickford expert in America. And it's going to have live organ. It's going to be our hope is we can transport you back to 1926. So that's another thing we were excited for. And that actually came out the sort of the same way Amanda said the Finnish films came out. We wanted to bring her in for a lot of reasons. She wrote this really great book on the history of Mary Pickford and why Mary Pickford sort of resonates still in film culture. And for whatever reason, it just wasn't happening. And then she had availability during Cinetopia, and we want to focus on silent film. We feel it sometimes can be forgotten about. So we have this organ. Let's use it.
And your organist is fantastic.
So I have to tell you, even though it's not really apropos of Cinetopia, our head organist, Stephen Ball, is actually leaving us at the end of June, and he is going to be the head organist at Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City. And it is the largest pipe organ in the world.
I'm a little mad because you're right. I can't see everything, and you've got such an incredible selection of stuff. But hopefully I'll be able to jigger it so that I can see what I want, when I want. I like that you're showing the same film a few times at a few different venues and everything so that I can kind of pick and choose to see where I am going to see things. You know,
I know we say we're excited about everything and everything's really good, and this is all true, but personally, I'm actually really excited that we're showing Haunter, which is Vincenzo Natali's latest film. The screenwriter is M. Brian King, and they've worked together before. Brian is an Ann Arbor native. He went to elementary school and middle school here, and so he's coming home for the screenings, and he'll be at both our Thursday night screening on June 6th and the screening on Saturday, June 8th.
Tell me about the tribute to Ron Ashton.
Oh, this is awesome. So in April of 2011, the Michigan Theater was the venue for a concert tribute to Ron Ashton from Iggy and the Stooges. And Iggy and the Stooges were here. The show was emceed by Henry Rollins, and it was a spectacle. It was crazy, crazy. It sold out, I believe, in less than an hour. And it was, people are still talking about it. Well, this is the concert documentary of that concert. The sound quality in the video that are in the film that we're showing is just great. It was so loud at the concert that night. This is actually pulled back a little bit, so the sound quality is spectacular. And so this is the world theatrical premiere of the film.
That'll be a little surreal seeing a concert movie in the same venue where the concert was filmed.
It's a little creepy. Yeah, it's like, oh, look at that. You know, we were watching our sizzle reel of some of the highlights of the festival, and there was this shot of the foyer. And at first, I just thought that it was like a festival atmosphere shot. You know, somebody selling merch, you know, the crowds lining up. And I thought, oh, festival atmosphere. Oh, no, that's part of the concert movie. That was here. It's a little surreal.
So when did you guys start planning this? Was this day one after Cinetopia one, or did you get any kind of break in between, or are you planning on, you know, in a few weeks planning on Cinetopia 3?
I'm already planning on Cinetopia 3. I never stopped working on Cinetopia after last year, except for the day after Cinetopia, but only because we had StarKid the following day. So if you're not familiar with StarKid, I'm not your guy, but a very, very large musical theater following from Ann Arbor. They took over the theater the next day. So we didn't even get a chance to breathe after the first Cinetopia. But we've been planning Cinetopia for a while now. A lot of the real programming and booking work doesn't happen until after Sundance, because we want to get a few festivals under our belts before we start making those decisions. So the day we got back from Sundance, we started booking films this year. We had already identified a few. We knew we wanted to work with the Finnish people. We knew we were going to work on the Pickford stuff. We knew about the Altman Symposium, kind of. And it was just sort of connecting those dots and taking what we had seen at Sundance and taking what we had seen at other festivals and then just starting to line it up.
So when it comes to the Altman Symposium itself, is that going to take place like at Angel Hall in the same venue where you're showing the films? Does it take place kind of as a side event? How does that work?
It's a separate event that's hosted by the University of Michigan Department of Screen Arts and Cultures, and I feel bad that I can't tell you off the top of my head where it is taking place, other than I can say it's not at Angel Hall. I think it's at the Hatcher Library on U of M's campus, but it's mostly Friday during the day over by about 4 or 5 o'clock, and then it's over at about noon, 1 o'clock on Saturday.
Brian, what are some of the films you're looking forward to seeing this year? For actually not seeing, I know you're going to be running around like a headless chicken, but for other people to experience this year.
One of my favorite films from Sundance this year is a film called This Is Martin Bonner, directed by Chad Hartigan. It's his second feature. It was the third film I saw at Sundance this year, and I fell in love with it. It's still the best film. I saw 37 films at Sundance this year. It's still my favorite film that I saw. I just think it's like a post-mumblecore, really intimate, beautifully shot, takes place in Reno, Nevada. And it's just one of those little films that I know that it's people say this a lot, you know, it's like one of those once-in-a-lifetime movies, but it really is. It feels that way. Everything about it is just, it hit me so hard. And so I'm really enjoying that. Another film I loved at Sundance this year was After Tiller, a documentary about the four remaining late-term abortion doctors in America and how Dr. Tiller's assassination really sent shockwaves through their very, very small community. But, like, it doesn't take a side. It doesn't promote pro-life or pro-choice in any great way. It humanizes these doctors. It talks about that they struggle. You see them struggle with the decisions that they're not making for people. They're helping people make. Another film, my tastes tend to run a little dark. I'm really excited for A Hijacking, a film from Tobias Lindholm. It's a Danish film. It's about Somali pirates take over a freighter and sort of the interaction between the crew of the ship, the terrorists that took over the freighter, but also the corporate headquarters where they have to sort of make the decisions and interact with the terrorists. And it's just one of those films. I feel like a remake is primed for America already. It's just one of those films that's coming from our friends at Magnolia. And it's just a nice film. Dear Mr. Watterson is another film that we're really excited about. Amanda discovered that at Cleveland this year. It's a documentary on why Calvin and Hobbes matters. And for a kid like me, I grew up with Calvin and Hobbes. I remember the first time I was shown Calvin and Hobbes. And it's a lot of talking heads talking about Calvin and Hobbes, but it's not here are 50 animators talking about Calvin and Hobbes. It's normal people. It's little kids. It's adults who all have this great experience in the same way that Peanuts really, really set a benchmark for my parents' generation, how Calvin and Hobbes did that for my generation. There's lots of films. Fill the Void is one of the best films I've seen this year. It was Israel's entry into the Academy Awards last year. It didn't make the short list, but it's just fantastic. Takes place in Tel Aviv's ultra-Orthodox community, and it's a marriage drama. It feels like a Bronte novel. The look and feel of this movie is so authentic. It was hard not to watch. I was really excited for it before we saw it at Sundance. It was a film that I was really on board with. I had heard great things out of Toronto about it and great things out of Venice about it. And I was just looking forward to it. And I told Amanda, oh, you got to see it. You got to see it. You got to see it. But I hadn't seen it yet. And I was really worried that she was bored.
We watched the trailer in my office, you know, a week or two or three before Sundance. And even at the trailer, I just thought it looked outstanding. So I'm excited about that one, too, for sure.
Another film I'm really excited to bring to have a chance to bring to Ann Arbor is 525-77, which is Patrick Reed Johnson's ode to Star Wars, if you will. He's been working on this film for a long time. It's been in the hopper for quite a while. And it wasn't really until the last year that he started to drag it out. He directed a sci-fi movie from the 80s called Invaders. He wrote, I believe, Dragonheart. And he made this film that's essentially his story of growing up and how Star Wars sort of hit him really hard as being the sci-fi obsessed kid in a small town in the Midwest. And I'm just really pleased to be able to bring the film and bring him out and talk about his experience. He told me recently that he has a two-hour, he can talk about the creation of this movie for about 2 hours. So I'm really excited. I'm sure he has lots of great stories. He's told me that a few of the props used in the movie have been used in so many science fiction movies at this point that the people who own them are making their own documentaries about that prop and how it's been used over time.
We'll have to put that on our Cinetopia shortlist for another year.
Cinetopia 3.
Well, yeah, it seems like it's got a great cast with John Francis Daly from Freaks and Geeks and Colleen Camp and Austin Pendleton. This sounds like it's going to be another terrific experience. So it's running June 6th through the 9th, right?
Right.
Up in Ann Arbor, you can get tickets at the Michigan Theater, State Theater, or Angel Hall. And then also, you've got a few days going on the Detroit Film Theater. We will post a link out to the festival website, which is cinetopiafestival.org, and people can definitely check that out, get to it through our website, or go directly to that URL.
Perfect. And we'd love to have you out. So come on out with Ann Arbor, Detroit, 4 days, 43 films. The best films from the best film festivals around the world. We are so excited about this program, and we can't wait to see you there.
And yeah, come say hi to us.
All right, we're back. Thanks again to Amanda and Brian from the Cinetopia Film Festival for taking the time to talk to us about Cinetopia. Again, you should go over to cinetopiafestival.org to check out everything that's happening this weekend in Ann Arbor and Detroit. And yeah, I don't know how many movies are showing, but it's got to be at least in the dozens and from all over the country. And they've got a lot of good guests coming out. So really, it's kind of nice. This is the second year that they've done this. And, you know, they blew me away the first year. And the second year seems to be even better, which is kind of amazing.
It looks like a good lineup. I'm excited about it. And you should be excited if you live in the Metro Detroit area, if you're anywhere near Detroit, or you want to, you know, carpool with Mike, or, you know, break into his house and get attacked by his rabid dogs, whatever. I mean, there's all kinds of things to do in Detroit.
Well, I wish you were out here seeing some of these movies with me. I think that would be kind of fun.
Yeah, it'd be pretty great, but I'm not. So that kind of sucks.
You're out there and I'm out here and never the twain shall meet.
Well, I mean, the twain will meet sometime, you know, and we'll mark that twain.
And you're coming over here, what, in August?
August, baby. August. That's right. The ski lodge here up on the mountain will be mothballed for 10 days as I head out to Metro Detroit in mid-August for all the fun. And, of course, I expect to be sort of rolling around in a stupor for 10 days in Detroit because everyone will be driving me around and plying me with drinks.
So are Wendy and Danny going to be okay at the lodge all by themselves?
Well, of course, because, you know, Lloyd will be here, and he serves some good drinks.
Anything else we need to talk about?
No, except make sure you continue to go to iTunes and make sure you subscribe to the Projection Booth podcast. Go to projection-booth.com. Leave us, you know, some feedback. Tell us what you think of these shows. Some folks have, and it's been great. We have a little side conversation, a little extra something, something. Someone's like, hey, you forgot to mention this in the show. And we say, sorry, you know, but thank you for pointing that out. Or they'll be like, oh, this was a great episode. I got to go see this movie now. Thank you for not spoiling it. And we try not to. So there's all kinds of ways to do it. Of course, 5 stars on iTunes. You can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, or projection-booth.com. And make sure to buy something from some of our sponsors because, you know, we do this out of the kindness of our heart because we love you.
Morning soul, got a sun power.